Good morning, Core. Anybody else psyched up to be here? At least psyched up after that video? We're so excited that you guys are here with us, and you're going to need a little bit of that motivation as we launch into this brand new three-week series that we are calling Greater Reward. And the reason that I say you're going to need a little bit of that motivation is because this entire series revolves around this concept, this tension that every single one of us live with in our everyday lives, and that is this: that every single day we live our lives according to the desired results that we want. That we make every decision based upon what we will get from that decision. We make every decision based upon the reward that will come from that decision. Am I right? And in every decision that we make, it isn't just about the reward. No, we want the greatest reward possible. Am I right? You see, what I know is that if any of us were presented with this decision and this opportunity, that you could choose between the $1 million jackpot and the $358 million jackpot, every single one of us in our right mind would choose the $358 million jackpot. When given the decision between fine and great, every single one of us would choose great. And yet the tension we all live with is this: whether you're a middle schooler, high schooler, young adult, or slightly older adult, we all live with this tension that we desire great, and yet daily we find ourselves making decisions that leave us at fine. And deep down, we want more. Deep down, we want better. For some of us, we find ourselves continuing to end up at fine when it comes to our finances. And we tried to make changes, we tried to make improvements, but Ben, you just don't understand. Every time I walk into that store, those shoes are calling my name. You might not be able to hear it, but I can hear it. Ben, every time I drive past the car lot, that brand new truck is just beckoning me to drive in and check out that leather interior with not just the heated seats, but the cooled seats as well. And it makes me question, over the course of the next 7 years, I can afford 60 grand, right? It's not that big of a deal. For some of us, we find ourselves continuing to end up with fine when it comes to our health. And we've wanted this year to be better, and we've wanted to get healthier, whether it was emotionally, mentally, or even physically. And yet, the gym membership that we signed up for was really only good for about the first 3 weeks of January. And every single day we keep walking past the break room and we see the box of donuts sitting there, and we've convinced ourselves that progress is now if we just stop in and we take out the little plastic knife and we cut it in half and we only have half of the donut, that's a healthier lifestyle in 2021 until we go back after lunch and eat the other half of what we've cut in half. For some of us, we find that in our marriage. And we stood across from that person and we said, I do, we wished for great, and yet here we find ourselves 5 years in, 25 years in, and it feels like it's just fine. And the reality is, Ben, you just don't understand how demanding my job is right now, and I just need an extra hour every night, another night in the office, or maybe just another night out with my friends instead of spending it with my spouse who feels neglected. And time again, we keep finding ourselves in the place where this isn't the reward we desired for this facet of our life, and yet we continue to remain at just fine. You see, the problem isn't the intentions in our lives, am I right? All of us have good intentions for what we desire. No. It's the follow-through that becomes a problem for so many of us. And if you walked into this room and in any facet of your life, you find yourself in that very boat where there's a facet of your life that isn't what you wanted it to be, and the reward you're experiencing it is far from great, what I want you to know this morning is this: you're not alone. You see, if you simply look to your right and look to your left, what you'll find is a multitude of people who have found themselves in the exact same situation in some facet of their life. And for some of you, you're like, Ben, but that doesn't help me much. Because when I look to my right and I look to my left, I knew those people were screwed up. Like, I knew they didn't have it all together, and that doesn't make me feel a whole lot better. And so I thought I needed to go in a different direction. You see, there's a guy who has a track record and a resume sheet that is far better than you and I have or could ever have. He's a guy by the name of Paul. And we pick up his story about 2,000 years ago. And if you know nothing about Paul, let me give you the quick 30-second backstory of Paul. Paul is a guy that wrote about 50% of the New Testament. Scholars debate between 13 and 14 books of the 27 in the New Testament were written by this guy, Paul. Paul was a guy who turned into one of, if not the greatest missionaries of all time. That's what we know about Paul's backstory. He was a guy who had his writings, and when he put pen to paper, those writings were chosen, not just for one of the most sacred texts of all time, but also, facts show, one of the most read texts of all time. Paul was a guy who was thrown in prison multiple times. He was shipwrecked. He was snake bitten. He was beaten. And yet every single difficult circumstance that Paul bumped into in his life, God somehow used it for something extraordinary for his kingdom. And you hear a rap sheet like that, and where many of our minds go, if you're anything like me, is this. There's a guy who had it all together. Here's a guy who literally got to experience the risen Christ and took direction for the future of his life from this guy named Jesus who was risen from the grave. He must have had it all together. He must have known what to do and how to make the right decisions to experience the greater reward in his life. And yet when we read what Paul wrote, we find the exact opposite. This morning we're going to dive in to the book of Romans, chapter 7. If you haven't done so already, it's a perfect opportunity to grab that notes page out of the middle of your weekly that you got when you walked in. And when you do, you'll find an opportunity for you to follow along as we move through the text and even fill in some blanks, or everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is what Paul writes about his journey that resonates with every single one of our lives and the difficulties we walk into when we make decisions that lead us to fine instead of great. Starting in verse 15, he writes this. I don't really understand myself, for I want to do what is right, but I don't do it. And I laugh, because is that not an MO of so many of the moments of our lives? Instead, I do what I hate. And I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my sinful nature. I want to do what is right, but I can't. I want to do what is good, but I don't. I don't want to do what is wrong, but I do it anyway. Oh, what a miserable person I am. Who will free me from this life that is dominated by sin and death? You see, here we find a guy who by all accounts could be defined as a titan of the faith. A guy who thousands of years ago seemed to have his life going in the right direction at every turn. And yet this is the way he looks at the decisions that he's making and describes them. I can't do what I know is right, and I keep doing what I know is wrong. Oh, what a miserable person am I. And you see, when I read that passage again, there was this question that rose to the surface in my life and in my mind, and it may be a question that many of you are struggling with in this very moment. Ben, if I look at my life, my present and my past, and I look at the people to my left and the people to my right, and I look back into time at the titans of the faith like Paul, and every single one of us find ourselves struggling with making decisions that leave us at fine or worse than fine, is there even a solution? You see, many of us have been reserved to this diagnosis, that our sinful nature and our sinful decisions that leave us at fine are just a part of the human condition. They're things that can't be changed and things we just have to live with. But what if this morning, what if throughout this series, I was able to convince you that the inverse was actually true? That there was a way in every single one of our lives and every single one of our marriages and every single one of our financial landscapes and every single one of our physical, mental, emotional health layouts, that there was an opportunity for us to climb our way out of the hole we find ourselves in. That it was possible for us to no longer live just by fine standards, but for us to experience a greater reward. But what if I told you that the path to the greater reward that God has for our lives, that he wants us to experience from this day forward, lied at the end of one word? Discipline. You see, at the very mention of that word, many of us shudder. Because this word discipline comes with negative connotations. That many of us in our minds, as we've defined this word over the course of our lives, we've thought that this word simply means the fun police coming to rob us of everything desirable in our lives. Like, Ben, hold up there. I've tried discipline and I have failed at that, and it is far too difficult. Discipline just makes me feel crappy about myself. And I don't know that I want to walk down that path. I don't know that I want to try that. I don't know that I want to engage in something that's too difficult for me to accomplish. Discipline, Ben, frankly, sounds so boring. Like, isn't there something better than discipline? Isn't there something more fun than discipline? And when each of us define this word discipline through that lens and those experiences of our past, we have every right to run kicking and screaming from this word discipline. But what if I told you that those definitions weren't an accurate definition? What if I told you that there was a far more accurate and relevant definition of this word discipline that had the potential to change our futures from this day forward? You see, discipline wasn't meant to be boring. It wasn't meant to be something that was impossible. It was simply meant to be a choice. Discipline can simply be defined as this, and maybe this is a game changer for the way in which we look at our future from this day forward. The discipline is simply choosing what we want most over what we want now. Discipline is our ability to choose what we want most over what we want now. And let's just be clear about this word as we embark on this new series and we focus our time around making changes and disciplining ourselves to do things differently for the sake of the greater reward. Discipline is not a word that is defined by working harder. Hello? Y'all okay? See, that's how I've defined discipline in my life. That's where I've lived. Discipline is just about pushing yourself harder. It's about having a better work ethic. It's about doing more, spending an extra hour or five, whatever it takes, to get the job done and to get the results you desire. But as my dad used to say, the results we desire in our lives aren't about working harder. They're more about working. Hey-oh, somebody else had a dad like me in the room. Discipline isn't about working harder. It's about working smarter. It's not about doing more, it's about doing the right things in the right direction. And when we change our definition to mimic what God desired for the discipline in our lives, it begins to change the choices that we make. It begins to change the decisions within the context of our finances, our friendships in school, and the people we choose to hang around with. It changes the course of the decisions we make in the context of our marriage or when it comes to our health, be it physically, mentally, emotionally, and even spiritually. You see, the truth is, many of us in this room, we want similar things. Like, there are a smattering of different desires when it all boils down to the key things in our life. Like, there aren't some people who are like, yeah, well, when I stood across the altar from my spouse and we said I do, deep down my goal was that one day we would end up at divorce. Right? None of us want that. Like, we all want the happily ever after. We all want great marriages. None of us signed up for our first big boy or big girl job and got our first paycheck and had dreams of making a great amount of money so that one day we could live paycheck to paycheck. And so that one day that paycheck could give us the confidence of going into insurmountable credit card debt. That was never the goal. None of us desired for our physical health to deteriorate and for us to have heart problems or organ problems because of our continual diet in our life. No, we all wanted to be healthier and live longer. We all have similar desires in our lives. But what if I told you that the desires don't determine who you become? Disciplines determine who you become. desires don't determine who you become. We all have great desires. It's the disciplines that determine who we become. And in order to do that in our lives, we have to shift our focus from not working harder in the wrong direction, but simply working in the right direction. You see, here's the reality for many of us. We move through our marriages, our finances, our careers, relying solely on our own willpower for success. And furthermore, relying solely on our own willpower to avoid the temptations that could derail us from that success. But along the way of relying on our own willpower, what we find every single time is this. There always comes a point where our willpower gives out, where we just can't go any farther. We can't push it anymore. You see, willpower is like a muscle in our lives. And yes, while a muscle, if worked out, grows and develops, there always comes a point where a muscle can go on no longer, right? For some of us, we reach that point at a mile. For some of us, we reach it at 26.2 miles. But there's always a breaking point to our muscles. There's always a point where it must quit and it can't go any further. And the same is true about your willpower and my willpower. No matter how much we've worked it and developed it, there will always come a point where our willpower can only take us so far. And the reality is in that day when we can't hold out any longer, we can't keep going, we're exhausted and it feels like we're not getting the results we want fast enough, we break down, we throw in the towel, we give in, and we start moving in a direction we never intended to move in. And here's the crazy part, y'all. Let's just throw it out on the table in week one. You see, you've heard me talk about this many times before, and the reason we acknowledge it is because it has the potential to be a game changer for our present and our future when we realize this truth. You see, all the time around here, we talk about this truth that we have a God who's in our corner, who's fighting for us, who wants what's best in our eternity, and our eternity doesn't stop after we die, or our eternity doesn't start after we die. Our eternity starts from this moment forward, and he wants us to experience life and life to the full. And what we often don't go the last 10% in acknowledging is this, is that while we have a God who wants all of those things for our life, we also have an enemy who wants the exact opposite for our lives. We have an enemy who wants you to believe that the best you can experience from this day forward is fine. An enemy that wants you to believe that this is as good as it gets. An enemy that wants you to believe that God couldn't possibly accept you or want to do anything in and through you if he knew what your past rap sheet looked like. An enemy that wants the worst for you so badly and is so good at what he does. Let's just throw that out there, y'all. We're naive if we don't acknowledge that truth, that Satan is good at what he does. Let's just call a spade a spade. And the way in which we know that he's good is because he puts this ridiculously incredible game plan into practice in our lives far too often. You see, in those moments of our lives, be it in our marriages, in our finances, in our health, whatever it may be, in those areas of our lives where we've relied fully on our willpower to get the right results, there comes a moment where we've reached our breaking point. We are ready to give up or give in. And at that very moment, Satan puts this game plan into practice. In that very moment, he begins to minimize. He minimizes the decision to give up or give in. And he begins to whisper these sorts of things to you and to me. You're struggling in your marriage. And everybody else looks at porn when they're not getting the sexual satisfaction they need in their marriage. Everybody else is doing it. You're struggling in your finances. It's what the credit card is for. It's no big deal. It's your get out of jail free card. And that 25% interest, it's not that big of a crutch on where you want to go financially in your future. You're feeling lonely and that you don't really have any friends in the workplace. Everybody else is gossiping around the water cooler. It's not that big of a deal for you to just engage in that a time or two so that everybody will like you and you feel like you fit in. Everybody else has stopped paying attention to their physical health. They stopped going to the gym. Everybody else is eating a tub of ice cream for dessert. Everybody else cheats a little to rise up the corporate ladder. Everybody else is going out on the weekends and drinking just a little bit too much to have some fun. It's no big deal for you to engage in those things either. It's just small. Look around. Everybody else is doing that. And here's where Satan gets really good. Because on the front end, before we've given up and given in, he minimizes the decisions to give up or give in. And yet immediately when we make those decisions, he flips the script in an instant. And he no longer minimizes those things. On the back end, he immediately begins to maximize every single one of those decisions. I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you gave in that way. I can't believe you engaged in that temptation. I can't believe you went to that website. If anybody ever knew that you were doing those things, your life would be absolutely ruined. You're not good enough anymore. There's no way God can love you. There's no way God can use you. Look at your past. Look at the mistake you just made. Look at how you've given up or given in. That defines who you are from this day forward. And what Satan is really doing in his game of maximization on the back end is this. He's introducing that facet of your life to shame and guilt. That's what he wants you to live with every single day of your life. Because what Satan knows to a T in your life and in my life is this, is that when we cling on to shame and guilt, it always keeps us from the greater reward that God has for us. That's how powerful those two things are. And the enemy wants us to live our lives believing that the best way forward to achieve our desired results is to live according to one cycle and one cycle only. If you just practice this one thing, then you'll get everything that you desire in your life. And what we actually find is the inverse. The problem is, Ben Carver has spent his life convincing himself that this cycle is the best way forward as well. You see, for me, my typical cycle for desired results always starts with trying harder. That if we want to get what we desire, we just simply have to try harder. We have to work longer. We have to do more. We have to give more. We have to sacrifice more of the things that are important to us on the altar of this thing that we want better results in. And so it's just about me trying harder. And when I try harder, what inevitably happens is this. Over time, there is only so much I can give. Y'all, there's only 24 hours in a day. And so thinking we're always just going to be able to give it another hour, stay another hour, there will reach a breaking point, whether we like it or not. And what ends up happening is eventually our willpower weakens. We find ourselves at the crux of not being able to move forward anymore. I have nothing left to give physically. I have nothing left to give mentally or emotionally. I'm spent. And my willpower can no longer hold me up. And when we reach the point where our willpower begins to break beneath us, what always happens is the inevitable failure. That we fail in that facet of our life. We don't get it right in our marriage. We don't get it right with our money. We don't get it right in our health. But things start to move down a path that we didn't want to go and that, frankly, we weren't supposed to go. But we made it all about my willpower, and my willpower couldn't hold out anymore, and so inevitably I failed. And in that moment, Satan swoops in, and he brings his two handy tools with him. When we experience inevitable failure, what comes on the heels of that is shame and guilt. You'll never be good enough. You'll never experience more. God could never want to use you for something incredible. You'll never be a world changer. And when we begin to hear those whispers of shame and guilt, do you know what we do? Do you know what our reaction is? For better or for worse, it's like, I'm going to prove you wrong. I can bounce back. I can get better. And the way in which I will achieve it is I'm going to restart the cycle again. And I must not have tried hard enough last time. I must not have done enough. And so this time, I'm going to try even harder. I'm going to rely even more on my willpower. And we find ourselves getting on this never-ending ride that never lets us off. I'm just going to try harder. And my willpower gives out. And then I fail. And then I experience shame and guilt. And the next time, it's just about me trying a little harder than that. And then my willpower gives out. And I fail. And I experience shame and guilt. It's this never-ending circular ride in our lives that keeps us trapped there year after year. This ride that doesn't want to let us get off and makes us miserable in the process, much like the witch's wheel at Cedar Point. Y'all ever been on that ride before? Several years ago, I went with some of my friends, actually right around this time, the day after homecoming, a group of us went to Cedar Point. And on that particular day, it was absolutely packed. And so we're walking around the park. Everything's like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours for you to get on and ride a ride. And we're like, man, we don't want to wait that long. And as we're moseying through the park, we come to the witch's wheel. And the witch's wheel has absolutely no weight on it. And so we're like, all right, something we can ride with no weight. Let's get on it. Now, if you've ever been on the witch's wheel before, I don't even know if there's a seatbelt on this stinking ride. But you sit down in this little cart, and it just has this metal gate that goes closed here. And you start, you sit like this, and you're like, all right, this is going to be fine. This is no big deal. It's this little tiny, like, carnival-like ride, you think. And what happens is it starts to go slow around in a circle. And then it picks up speed to the point where you're going so fast that the car is no longer vertical, it becomes horizontal. And so you're on your side going around like this. And if that's not bad enough for the lunch that you just had, it has an arm that begins to propel you upwards. So you're going like this around and around and around and around. And we get off that ride, and it's like, I don't know what's up or down. I don't know that I'm going to hold in my lunch. And one of the guys in our group is like, hey, everything else is a wait. Let's just ride this again. I'm like, dude, we ain't staying on this ride. He's like, fine, you guys can wait if you want, but I want to ride something, so I'm getting on again. And he hopped onto this ride again, and immediately after he got on it, we knew what was up. Like, we knew the trash can beside this ride was going to experience the fair fries that he just had at the stand down the street, right? And there's this reality that when we stay on a ride like this for too long, it's only a matter of time before we start throwing up all over every part of our lives. When we stay on this cycle believing that it will bring us the results that we want, we end up sitting out other rides that God had designed for us to ride, better rides in our future, because we're so sick from being on this ride. But what if I told you God had something better for every single one of us? A better ride, a better cycle for us to get on that leads to the greater reward, that better results could be found elsewhere. I love how Paul finishes that passage that we read earlier. At the end of Romans chapter 7, verse 24, he ends with this question, and then he finishes it, and I thought we'd go back to the question to refresh our memory of where he was coming from. But Paul, in verse 24, said this, right after he's like, I keep doing all the things I don't want to do, I don't do what I want to do, like, I don't know who I am, I don't know what's up with me. He says, who will free me from this life that is dominated by sin and death? And then he gives an answer. Thank God. The answer is in Jesus Christ, our Lord. So you see how it is? In my mind, I really want to obey God's law. I really want to do the right things. But because of my sinful nature, I am a slave to sin. Because of my sinful nature, I'm incapable of always doing the right things. But the answer for where I find the best results possible and the greater reward lies in one place and in one place only. A Savior who was willing to sacrifice his life. What he wanted most became a reality when he sacrificed what he wanted now. We see that in the garden. God, if you can take this cup from me, it's what I want now. Please do it. But not your will, but not my will be done, your will be done. I'm willing to sacrifice what I want now for what I want most. And because of that, we have redemption in our future from our past mistakes. You know what Paul is really laying out here? If you've gone anywhere, come back, because this is so good, y'all. Paul is saying, if you want the desired results, it's not about behavior modification. It's about spiritual transformation. Hello. The greater reward isn't about behavior modification. It's not about trying harder. It's not about your own willpower. No, it's simply about spiritual transformation. It doesn't start with action. It doesn't start with a question of what am I doing? No, it begins with the question of who am I? Or better yet, whose am I? It starts with this acknowledgement. Every creation operates best when in the hands of the Creator. Think about that. That applies to any object on this earth. Every creation operates best when in the hands of the Creator. Every invention is best known by the Creator and can be used to its fullest extent by the Creator. And yet we continue to move through our lives thinking that the number one factor in our successes is our own willpower. Come on, y'all. We have something way better at our disposal than our own willpower. We have a God who holds the world in his hands, who formed you in your mother's womb, who knows the intricacies of your life, who numbers the hair or the lack thereof of hairs on your head. We have a God who knows us best, and why do we continue to ignore the fact that we as his creation operate best when we place our lives in his hands? You see, Paul continues to drive this point home time and time again, because Paul is like, man, I've been there. I know what it's like. I keep forgetting. I keep coming back to the place where I've made all the wrong choices. And so Paul, time and time again in his letters to the churches, much like us, continues to remind them, here's how you get on a better cycle. Here's how you experience a greater reward. And in his letter to the church in Galatia, chapter 5, verse 16, he writes this incredible advice. So I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. What's Paul saying here? Paul is saying, walk closely with God. And when you do, you won't make all the mistakes that come along with your own willpower. Now let me give you a quick 45-second language lesson here. This is where I geek out, but I promise you I'm going to limit it and keep it quick. Like, I could spend a long time here. But in this passage, this word that we see at the end in the English language, flesh. In the original Greek language, that's what the New Testament was originally written in. This word flesh is actually the word in Greek, sarx. S-A-R-K-S, sarx. And this word, when translated out in the Greek language, the translators use the word flesh here. But Paul, what he was really meaning in the Greek language was these two words, sinful nature. Paul was saying, in your life, for the results you want, you can't trust yourself because you have a sinful nature. A sinful nature that, whether you like it or not, as humanity, will always lead you down the wrong path. Will always attempt to convince you that what you want now is better than what you want most. It will always lead you towards immediate gratification. And I'd rather have gratification now and consequences later than have some pain now and the greater reward later. But Paul says, scratch all that. No, let me paint you a picture of what the best life looks like. If you want to experience the greater reward, and here's where the picture comes into play, you are to walk with the Spirit. Now, why is that such a great word picture? Y'all are like, what in the world is going on here? That doesn't seem that great. It seems pretty basic to me. Now, what Paul is saying here in the original language is this. How do you walk? You make the decision to take a step. You take a difficult step. And then after you've taken that step, what makes it walking is you take another. You take another difficult step, and then you take another difficult step, and then you take another difficult step. No matter how uncertain it may be and how little sense it makes to your flesh, to your sarks, to your sinful nature, you do that again and again and again according to God's leading in your life, according to what you know is right, according to God's will. You take step after step after step until that becomes habitual in your life. That's what Paul is laying out here. You see, for many of us, we find ourselves in this place where what feels right to us is relying on my own willpower. Like, that's what feels natural. That's what feels good. That's what we've done for a long time. And so starting to rely on God, that kind of feels a little weird, right? Like, giving up control and giving up my will for God's will, like, that doesn't feel quite right. And Paul's saying, man, if you want to experience the greater reward and the best life possible, you need to find yourself flipping that to where you've walked step after step after step in the midst of uncertainty, in the midst of what doesn't make sense, just trying to follow God with all of your heart, that when you try to rely on your own willpower, that starts to feel weird. That doesn't feel right. You know something is off in those moments. And Paul is saying, you want a cycle for the actual results that you desire, your cycle should look something like this. That in order for us to get actual results, it starts by depending on the Spirit, depending on God in our lives. And when we do that in our lives and we start to give up some of our own control and submit ourselves to God's will for our life, our marriage, our family, our finances, our parenting, whatever it may be, what happens is when we walk through that uncertainty and we don't have complete control or we don't know what the future holds, what that does in every single one of our lives is this: it builds our faith. It builds our faith. And as our faith grows inside of us, our trust in God, that God is who he says he is, and he'll do what he's promised to do, what ultimately happens is this. It empowers us to make the right decisions. It empowers us to right actions in our lives. We start to do the right thing, even when it's hard. We start to do the right thing, even when it costs us something in the immediate, because we know there's a greater reward on the back end for doing what's right in the immediate. And when we do that, and we're empowered towards the right actions, and we start making the right decisions, even when it's hard, in our marriages, in our finances, in our health, and we start making those right decisions, and we know, like, oh, shoot. God really did know what was best for me. He really did want me to experience life and life to the full. And yes, it's not easy, but it's also so much better than what I was experiencing before. What happens is we grow closer to God. We start to gain trust. We start to gain appreciation for who he is and how much he loves us and what he does for us. And this cycle, as much as the other one didn't want to let us off, this is a cycle we don't want to get off. Once we start on this cycle, it's like, oh my goodness, I've gotten closer to God. And so the natural step is in the next decision, I'm going to depend on the Spirit. And when I do that, it builds my faith. And when my faith grows, then I start making the right decisions. And when I make the right decisions and I know that God has my back, then I grow closer to God. And as I get closer to God, it only feels natural in the next decision for me to depend on the Spirit. And as I depend on the Spirit, it builds my faith. And as my faith grows, I make the right decisions. And as I make the right decisions, I grow closer to God. You see, this is a ride that leads us to where we want to go and where God wants us to go. But the closing question we ask is maybe simply this. Ben, when you say that the first step up there towards getting the greater reward and what God wants for my life is to depend on the Spirit, that sounds really churchy, and I have no clue what you're talking about, right? Like, I don't even know what that looks like. I don't even know where to start. And last service, I'm going to make a correction. I was sitting here in worship, and I was like, just hit me. Like, I didn't get that right. Last service, I said the first step for us to depend on God was to stop depending on ourselves so much. See, in reality, for some of us, the first step is to just simply have a relationship with God. To give our lives and our hearts to a God who loved us enough to send his son to this earth to die an excruciating death so that we never had to. See, depending on God begins with just having a relationship with God. And now we're free to move to number two. That in order for us to depend on the Spirit, we have to stop depending on ourselves so much. We have to give up some control. We have to give up some of our wants. We have to give up some of our desire. We have to give up some of our will for a God who knows best for our lives and has a better will for our lives and for our future. And then lastly, we have to be people who, in that relationship with God, if we're going to depend on God, we have to spend a little time with God. Like, today's more about getting back to the fundamentals than it is about something revelatory in every single one of our lives that you've never heard before. Because the greater rewards often are about us getting back to the basics and doing those things well. See, much like in our marriage, you can't depend on your spouse if you don't spend any time with them. The same is true in our relationship with God. You can't say that you're depending on God and his Spirit and his leading and his direction if you're unwilling to spend any time with him. And y'all, coming to church on Sunday morning, that's a good starting spot. But this model of what Paul shows of like step by step, day by day, like Sunday, y'all, just doesn't cut it. It's a good starting point, but it's not the end all be all. It's something that we should be engaging in to try to make habitual Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday in our lives. For some of us, we make it more complicated than what it needs to be. Like spending some time with God can be as simple as a one-sentence prayer. Man, what would it look like if when you're driving up to work, in the minute before you get out of the car, you simply prayed this one prayer. God, today, not my will, but your will be done. Whoop. Open the door, get out, walk into your workplace. Man, I promise you, that would change things drastically. If you could bring yourself to a place where you could utter those words every morning before you walked into your workplace, before you walked into your first period class, whatever it may be, you could say, God, I want to depend on you more, and so today, not my will, but your will be done. Whatever that is, I'm in. I'm on the ride. I'm leaning in. I can't do it myself anymore, and so I'm giving you just a little bit more power in our lives to spend a little time with him. Not to read a whole book of the Bible. Start with a verse or a couple. Every day, say, God, I'm leaning in just a little bit. I'm leaning in just a little bit. I'm leaning in a little bit because I'm tired of depending on myself because it always leads to inevitable failure. I'm tired of walking through failures, y'all. I want something better. I want something greater. And to do that, some days what I have to come back to remind myself is this. This is the power I have at my disposal. This is the power I can grip in my life. That Christ's power in me is stronger than my desires in me. And when Christ is a part of my life and my story, Christ's power in me is stronger than my desires in me. None of us have the willpower to achieve our desired results. But we have a God who does. The answer doesn't lie in us just creating our own self-control, right? That's the answer. More self-control. And we think self-control is about holding on to more and getting more control. That's how we develop self-control in our lives. And Paul, just a few verses later, is like, hold on, y'all. Wait. Self-control is the answer, but not the way you're going about getting it. No. The self-control you need is actually a gift you get from leaning into a relationship with Jesus Christ. Hello? You gain more self-control in your life when you actually give up control to Jesus in your life. Don't believe me? Verse 22, here's what he writes. But the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness. All these incredible things are gifts we get when we spend time with God. And then he finishes it with a powerful one. Oh yeah. And self-control. Wait a second. I get more control when I give up more control. I get more control and experience better things in my life when I'm willing to give up control and recognize every creation operates best when placed in the hands of the Creator. We have that opportunity. But now, to experience the greater reward, we have to make the choice. Will we follow through? Will we have some discipline? Am I willing to place my life, my will, my wants, my desires in his hands? Would you pray with me? This morning, maybe some of us are sitting here and we've never even taken that first step. I want a greater reward. I want better results. I'm tired of just fine. I'm tired of my own failures. You know, I've never really had a relationship with Jesus. Or Ben, if I were being honest, I walked away from that a long time ago. Maybe not in my words, certainly in my actions. Man, if that's you this morning, and this first step lies in front of you that has the power to change your life, change your eternity, change your future from this point forward. And it's as simple as saying these words in your own heart. God, this morning, I need you. I've tried harder. I've relied on my own willpower. I've done it myself. It keeps ending in failure. Help me. Help me. Be a part of my life. From this day, I want to move towards your will, not my will. It's in your name that I pray. And for the rest of us in this room, Father, give us courage. Giving up control is never easy. God, help us to become people who are able to choose what we want most over what we want now. And to lean into you just a little bit every single day. To depend on you so that we can build our faith, so that we can make the right decisions and ultimately grow closer to the Creator who knows what's best for his creation. God, may we move towards that cycle in our life. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.